Hi folks, Jeff Salzman here, and today I'm with my friend Fazir Shaku, who I have never met personally, but have talked with by phone. And Fazir is here with us from Tehran, Iran. And welcome to you, Fazir.
Thank you very much.
For a little bit of background for the folks, Fazir is both a citizen of Iran and a citizen of the United States, having lived here in 1975 through almost 2000, I guess, Fazir, right? And then back
in Iran
since then.
Right, till 1994, but I was back and forth till 1998.
Yes. Well, you certainly, you have a deep understanding of both cultures, and that's what makes me so excited to talk to you tonight about what's going on in the geopolitics between Iran and the West, the United States particularly, and the powers that be, and just how you're seeing that and what you're feeling in Tehran and what do you think? Let's just start there.
Well, the first thing is that we need to note that our society is mainly red to amber, you know, tribal to traditional society. About 15% of the society is modern, but our modernity is not our own native modernity. So it's an imported modernity.
Mm-hmm. Let me just stop you there for a second, Fazir. So are you saying that there's a different modernity in Iran than there is in other parts of the world where modernity is also online?
Well, it's not a native modernity like in the West. It's not our own. It's imported from the West in the past 150 to 60 years.
Yeah. So that means that the Iranians have an ambivalent feeling about modernity in general, are uncomfortable.
Well, I wouldn't call it ambivalent, but I would call it kind of superficial. You know, it's not our own. It's not intrinsic.
Yes. All right.
You know,
so then the red and amber strata of your culture has a lot of weight, essentially.
Exactly. I would say to about 70 to 75%.
Yes. So regarding the developments of last week, where we had an agreement to just basically freeze things in place and let's at least create a space where we can talk for the next 6 months and see what we can do, how are you seeing that? How are your countrymen seeing that? And what can you tell us there?
Well, almost everybody is happy about it. There's a sense of optimism because the sanctions has been hard on the people, and it has really worked despite the regime's denials. The sanction was successful in, you know, bringing these people to the table.
Yeah.
The other thing is that please note that this is a six-month treaty. It hasn't turned into a permanent one. So they have both sides, both the Obama administration and the regime in Iran, needed to come to some kind of agreement. And they could not agree on a permanent treaty, so they got into a six-month treaty, you know, on the side of Iran, they decided to freeze their nuclear activities, enrichment, if they stay on that promise. And on the side of the West, the 5+1 countries, they have decided to loosen up some parts of the sanctions.
Yes. It sounds like a good start, as you say, a good start.
Yeah. I wouldn't even call it good. I just call it a start.
All right.
You know, I'm very precise on the use of the words. You know, when we say good start, we don't know it's going to be a good start. We might know about it 6 months from now or a year from now, but it's a start.
That's
it's
right.
An opening.
It's an opening. And it reminds me, when you look at the statements by John Kerry and Zarif, I believe is his name, Zarif. And it's almost like a couple coming out of couples therapy, where they just, we didn't really come to much agreement, but we agreed to sit down and sort of be in each other's space. We haven't talked in a long time. We had to get comfortable with each other. We're not going to do each other any harm for a while, and we're just going to normalize things and just get real. And it just struck me as like tremendously self-aware in a way, these statements coming from both sides. So I was optimistic about that.
We have a good reason to be optimistic, but please also note that officially they have not been talking, but behind the doors, both sides have been talking for a long time. And from last March, this latest conversation started between an Undersecretary of State, William Burns, and some Iranian officials in Oman. Jordan. So they've been talking in the past 27, 8 years unofficially, and in the recent development, they've been talking since last March. I also would like to note that Zarif himself has graduated, has a PhD in international relations from University of Denver, right next to you.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, it's good. You feel the world centrism that is at work.
Look at Zarif's body language. Zarif's body language is not a present regime's body language. It's a very open Western American, open, smiling, and relaxed. And, you know, he's loosened up. This is an American educated guy that works.
And you're saying this is Zarif?
This is Zarif, exactly, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so the foreign minister. Yes, he's terrific.
And on the other hand, please note that John Kerry's son-in-law, the husband of his daughter, is an Iranian doctor in Boston.
Excellent.
So
well, you can feel, again, this
connection.
Yeah, and that's that world centrism. That is really powerful in ways that aren't immediately visible when you're just looking at sort of the old paradigms of foreign relations and international relations. So if you look at the P5 plus one, that's the U.S., Russia, China, U.K., France, and Germany. These countries, historically at war, some for centuries, if you look at, you know, France and Germany and the U.K., but they're all on the same side. Now, unfortunately, your beautiful country is on the other side of it.
I also want to take your attention to Chinese foreign minister's body language.
Mm-hmm.
He's not an ideological guy either. He's part of the new regime in China. They're very pragmatic. You know, Chinese players are also very pragmatic at this time.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody's pragmatic at this point, except for, you know, some of the hard line. But people really don't want to do war anymore.
Fortunately, the extremists on both sides, both on the United States side, on the European side, and on the Iranian side, do not have the upper hand.
Yes, that's right.
In this negotiation.
History since World War II, the superpowers, particularly the United States versus Russia versus China, have used the rest of the world, and your country as well, as a proxy war. And now everybody's on the same side because that modern consciousness that has really come online so much since World War II sees that the way forward for countries is to get in the game with each other. And I, for one, and I think I'm speaking for a lot of people in the West, I'm dying to get what Iranianism is, what Persian is, what, you know, I want Iran to be part of the game and not this outside thing.
Yeah.
Now, are there people in Iran that don't want that? I mean, when you talk about the red and amber strata, do they really think that it's appropriate to be just jihad? Is that all, you know, what's the mentality?
Well, it's a minority that has the power. I would say there are about 5% of the population, and with the subsidies and the money that they give to the people around themselves, they are about 15% of the population. About 5% yeah. are ideological, and about 10% are bought with money and subsidies.
Uh-huh.
So these 5 to 15% have the power and have the, you know, wealth of this country, which is mainly oil and gas revenues.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people that have the power. The rest of the people are moderate. They're friendly toward the West.
Right.
And,
I know, that's something. So, you're saying that 15% of the population really has, well, the power, but that's changing now.
Well, I wouldn't say it's changing, but it's on a decline.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're the powers that be. They're the powerful ones. They have the wealth in their grasp. It's not changing, but still on a initial decline, I would say.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, and what keeps them in that position first is the wealth of the petrodollars.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that people are not empowered. People are not in solidarity. People are not active agents.
Now, is that because it's illegal to organize an opposition and opposition newspapers and so forth?
Yes, that's one reason. But you see, the people of Iran are very gentle. They're not Ukrainians. They're not as tough as the Germans or the Ukrainians to get violently into the streets.
Uh-huh, interesting.
They oppose the regime in their own gentle ways.
Oh, that's sweet, in a way. How does that look different?
Well, you know, we are not very tough-skinned people to fight the regime. If mm-hmm. you look at the Iranian history, they have opposed the regimes. Gradually, they have caused the regime to calm down or to fade away.
Right, right.
They don't cause it, you know, they don't cause the change violently or drastically or abruptly.
Yeah. Well, certainly it feels like progress that Rouhani was elected, the president, rather.
Yes. Exactly.
And I think, don't we all know, Fazir, what the outcome of these negotiations are going to be? And that is that Iran will get the opportunity to create a nuclear program for energy, and that it won't be militarized, and that it'll be sort of transparent. And then everybody gets to save face, everybody gets something, and we move on with life.
Yeah, but first of all, let me tell you that this whole nuclear activity and uranium enrichment is a big, big mistake sociologically and economically, because this country is a solar area. We could have got a lot of energy from the sun in the desert.
Right.
We did not need to go nuclear.
Well, I think in an ideal world they wouldn't, but that's going to be hard to just denuclearize your country, don't you think?
Yeah, but look at the situation. They have been spending over $200 billion since 1974. That's 5 years before the revolution. The nuclear activity in Bushehr, the city in the south, it started 5 years before with the Shah of Iran. He mm-hmm. wanted to be a regional nuclear power, and at that time the Western societies were with him.
Mm-hmm. Now, a nuclear power in terms of nuclear power, or nuclear power in terms of nuclear weapons?
Both.
Okay, all right.
Both. Yep.
You wanted both. And that's what's happening now, Fazeer. Your people want both. I mean, I think isn't there wide agreement that you people have the right to actually have a nuclear weapon, but certainly a nuclear power industry? Hasn't that become a point of national pride?
Not the nuclear bomb. People
okay,
do not
good.
Want a nuclear bomb. People want, nuclear capacity to be considered as an advanced nation.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, it's an unnecessary humiliation otherwise.
Yeah. But this is, in my opinion and some other people's opinion, this is also a mistake. We don't need nuclear enrichment. I mean, the country has so much sun area that they could easily get the energy from the solar activity in the deserts.
Right. I think your country eventually will get to that. As we look beyond orange into green, I mean, it may not be in our lifetime, but good sense does win out over time.
Yeah, that's the intention of the regime and some people.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. So people are feeling happy about this.
Yeah.
The sanctions have made life hard.
Really hard, yes.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that, Fazeer.
Well, the import of a lot of things, including food and drugs, became very, very difficult. And that made the inflation to triple.
Yes.
So the price of everything right now, including the currencies like the dollar and the euro, is three times what it was about 3 years ago.
Hmm.
And also, the previous government, that crazy guy, they started to cut the subsidies to basic food and commodities like gas, and they started to give the subsidies directly to the people.
Right. This is Ahmadinejad.
Yeah, exactly. This boosted the inflation even further.
Yeah.
So the price of almost everything has gone up 3 to 4 times.
Yeah. So
because of the sanctions.
Yes. So the election of Rouhani was a message from the electorate to solve this problem, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, what a way to go to war. I mean, it's not pretty, but when you look at the historical alternatives, it's at least peaceful, and apparently, after a long haul, is turning the corner. And I feel that it will. I am actually pretty optimistic, just because it's in everybody's interests. Nobody wants, who wants Iran not to be part of the game? Why? Maybe there are some hardliners in Israel or even in the United States. I mean, if you look at the mentality of Red, see that they have to be at war. They actually have to have an enemy or their psyches aren't organizing properly.
Well, it's more, Jeff, it's more complicated than that. If you look at what the Saudi Arabian government or regime is looking at it, you see, the Iranian regime in the past 30 years, and more so in the past 8 years, it started to incite the Shiite elements in the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain.
Yeah.
And Saudi Arabia is afraid, the regime there is afraid that if Iran enters the global community they will become stronger in inciting the Shiite elements in the Islamic Sunni world.
Yeah.
You know, so they're very much opposed to this rapprochement.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're familiar with what Netanyahu is, where he's standing in his situation with
yes.
Iran.
Yes.
So these are two very powerful countries in the Middle East that, and their strong lobby in Washington, D.C., are very much opposed to any agreement, long-lasting agreement, between the U.S. and Iran.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the traditionalists in all of these countries, are having their own war, where there is no surrender, there is no compromise. You do not compromise with the devil.
Yeah.
And so you have to continue to fight the devil.
Yeah. Ironically, they are in line with the hardliners, Islamic hardliners in Iran.
Totally. No, I'm saying that the red in all of these countries, they're having their own private war. The good thing is, Vizier, is that they're in the minority now. They actually aren't the ones in power. Thank God.
Yeah, for now. I mean,
for now.
Really, they don't have the upper hand.
Well, I think when you have 80%+ of the population of your country wanting to get on with life and join the world and have a, you know, be part of the fruits of this beautiful world. That want to be modern, basically. That's a pretty powerful, powerful energy, cultural energy.
Yeah.
And that's what emergence is. You know, it actually has a directionality to it. You know, you have Netanyahu and as you say, the Sunni Shiite thing in throughout the Middle East and in Saudi Arabia, but I actually think, regarding Saudi Arabia's fear that a stronger Iran will mean a stronger sort of undermining of the Sunnis, I actually think it would be the opposite. Because as Iran becomes more modern, at least the intelligentsia, at least the people running the government, have no interest in that anymore. It's boring. It's what our grandparents did.
Yeah. But, Jeff, this is a very bumpy road.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Red to amber to the modern and orange.
Yeah.
It's a lot more complicated than what the West has experienced to reach modernity.
Yes, you know. That's a good point. And tell us, give us a little bit more on that. That's really so interesting that because it's really coming in from the outside, modernity, that it doesn't have a rootedness and an indigenousness that the West has that is, you know, significant.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I tell you, and this is what I also told Barrett Brown, I said that assuming they will have a long-lasting treaty, the challenge on our side is a lack of managerial competence. We do not have, after these 34-plus years, we do not have a competent managerial class to deal with the complicated challenges and the problems that we have. You know, we have to train a whole generation of modern managers.
So how does it look, Fazir, in an Iranian organization where there is an obvious lack of managerial competence? Is it still more of a tribal kind of, or, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine? What's the operative structures in the lower quadrants, if you will?
Well, it's more of the amber. It's more of the traditional than red in the managerial sector.
Mm-hmm.
In the past 34 years, they have put incompetent people in place of managers. You know, they they have chosen people based on their ideologies rather than competence.
Yeah.
Educated, you know, highly capacity people are not with these people. They don't get along. So they have either left or have not chosen to stay in the managerial capacity of this regime.
Yeah. Yeah, that...
So this is a kind of complicated issues.
Well, that's where you come in, Fazir. Because
exactly.
You are highly educated in the West, having gone through the work with Pacific Integral and Meta Integral, and now doing a PhD program with an integral.
Well, I'm not doing it. I will start it next September.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
And you're actually bringing some of these ideas to Iran as a coach and as a consultant, correct?
Yeah. Exactly, yes.
So tell us a little bit about your work and some of the problems or what's interesting about your work.
Well, you know, before I got into integral studies, my work is called CSE. CSE stands for Care, Service, Empowerment. And you can go into cseconsulting.org. That's one of the sites that we have for our work here.
Uh-huh.
It's not updated, but it gives you some idea of what I've been doing here in the past 12 years. So what I call the managerial matrix of 15 elements. I don't want to go through all of it now. I can email it to you. The three important elements in it is care, service, empowerment. So on care, the gist of what I'm saying is that our caring is mostly emotional. But if
right.
you look at the Western structure of caring, it's very much committed care rather than emotional care.
Yeah.
So what I do on the element of caring in Iran is that how we do need to structure our emotional care into committed care. And
uh-huh.
I don't know whether I'm clear on what I mean by committed
Committed care would have more of a lower right element. It would actually have structures
exactly.
to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's it sounds like a really essential move for
yeah.
your culture. And Fazir, let's have this conversation. But let's
yeah.
not do this one now. This feels like a different conversation, but I'd love to have it with you.
Yeah. But let me also say something on the climate, because there was an email I sent you about, I think, 2 weeks ago, on the status of the climate in Iran, that the greatest threat to Iran is the climate change rather than negotiation with the Western powers. They have destroyed the environment very, very much in the past 34 years. You look at our forests, you look at our air, you look at the status of, animals protection, environmental protection. It's in an abyss. It's in
yes.
a very, very critical situation.
Oh, well, God bless you people. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And Iran is turning more into a desert
mm-hmm.
because of the policies of past 34 years. And also the population has increased in the past 34 years from 34 million into 75 million.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
all very challenging.
It is very challenging. It requires
yeah.
a whole generation of competent managers to tackle all these complicated issues.
I know. That's true.
Yeah, so this treaty, assuming that it becomes a permanent treaty, hopefully so, it's good and constructive, but it's only a honeymoon. we have a lot of challenges ahead of us.
Yes. And it'll be good to be moving in the right direction of
yep.
healing things and growing and into development instead of deconstruction.
Yeah, I think it is very critical to utilize the integral program, the Aqua model and other stuff for our coaching in Iran.
Yeah, and when you talk about the unique difficulties of dealing with bringing on modernity when it's not indigenous, and as is happening in Iran, and that represents problems that we in the West don't have or didn't have, that's true. And there's a whole sort of nightmare of making it up as you go along, which is what we did. And child labor in factories and the horrors of these industrial dystopias that hopefully you folks can skip some of that.
Yeah, there are some good signs that we are skipping some part of that.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, Fazir, I want to thank you again for joining us and being so generous with your time and your wisdom and your insight and the multiple perspectives that you have, having a foot in the West and Iran. It's just beautiful to feel you as well as to hear you share it with us about this. So we'll stay in touch and have more to come. Thank you, Fazir.
Yeah, thank you for your invitation, and I appreciate your time also.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.